All right, welcome everyone to this month's Zojo Talk podcast. I'm Paul Lefevre, the Zojo developer evangelist, and my special guest this time is Zojo engineer Travis Hill. Welcome, Travis.
Hey, Paul.
Long time no see.
Yeah.
Travis and I are chatting all the time using Zoom, and this is kind of funny to be doing it as a podcast, but it's what the people demanded. They wanted to hear from other engineers.
Yes, so here we are.
So, Travis, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do at Zojo, what you got for likes and hobbies, and who is Travis Hill?
Who is Travis? Another short answer and long answer. Let's see. What led me here to Zojo? I guess I can answer it that way. I've been programming for all of my life that I can remember. My parents tell me I was four when I started programming.
Nice. Four.
And that I knew words like for and go to before I did bat and cat, like a good kindergartner. But so programming a lot. The first big project I did was a bulletin board system. I don't know if you ever played around on those before the internet.
Yeah. Before the internet, the first thing I had was a 1200 baud modem hooked up to my Atari back in the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you dialed into some boards from time to time.
Oh, yeah. I used it. I got it when I was at, you know, I'm probably a little older than you, but I got it when I was in college. So I used it to call into the Unix machines there and do my projects and stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So what I did, I made a bulletin board program for DOS. So SysOps could run multi-line bulletin boards without needing a fancy multitasking system. I started selling that software. It went okay. I was pretty young at the time, naive, didn't know much about business or how to deal with customers. But, you know, that's the best way to learn. Just try it. Start.
See how it goes. Try it, yeah.
So I did that for a while. I did a lot of consulting work for small businesses and then some larger Fortune 500 businesses. I did a startup after that of my own for instant messaging. Because I got frustrated where at the time there were networks like Yahoo and PowWow and AIM and ICQ. I don't know if you remember ICQ.
Yeah, I remember ICQ.
But they were all these disparate things and there wasn't a program at the time to talk to all of them at the same time. So I grabbed a relative of mine. We started a company and built a piece of software that did that. And that was fun. We got a bunch of downloads, a bunch of users, and eventually sold that business. After that, I went into a phase where I thought I was going to learn about music production. You can see got a keyboard and a mic back there.
Yeah, for our listeners who won't be able to see that later, yes, right behind Travis in his office is a very fancy, to me anyway, keyboard with a microphone hooked up in front of it.
Yeah, it's my small studio inside of my office, but trying to learn music production led me into another phase of my career where Napster started up in the late 90s. And it frustrated me because I didn't see how on earth I could make any money producing music when everyone was sharing it for free.
I bet that frustrated a lot of people. I know it frustrated a lot of people.
Yeah. So I did another startup that was based on tracking Napster behavior and trying to do basically anti-piracy work to try and shepherd people into budding legitimate services that were starting to pop up. And that, you know, around that time is when you started seeing music stores like Rhapsody and iTunes got going and things like that. So I ended up doing that for quite a while. That company was bought, and then we took that company and sold it again. So over the course of 13, 14 years, I was doing anti-piracy work since the start of Napster to just a couple of years ago. And well, that was a long-winded way of getting me to Zojo. But I had decided after all of those years of anti-piracy work that I was going to take a break, just do some, you know, angel investing, maybe do another startup of my own, but I didn't want to do full-time work. And then I realized, hey, you know, these Zojo people, I used Zojo all the time, and I'll get more into that. As a user, I've been a user since version 3 of Real Basic.
Yeah, it's about when I started.
And having been a user of the tool for so long, when the opportunity came up to help out the company directly, I thought, hey, that might be interesting. So I shelved my plans to take a break from full-time work and jumped right into Zojo. And I've been here now, what, just over a year? Can't even tell anymore.
it's just a blur. Yeah. No, I like the fact because, you know, I used to be the newest employee and then Travis started and he took over the little hat we all have to wear.
Right. Yeah. No, I already feel like a grizzled vet, but I'm the newbie at the same time.
You've been here like a year and a half at least.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what brought me to Zojo. And I do general engineering and other support things, try and make the trains run on time, all that good stuff. I've learned a lot being on the other side. It's always an interesting change in perspective when you're a user and then you start working on the product itself.
Yeah, but it's been same fun. Thing for me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so like you said, you were a longtime user before you worked on the product.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I used Zojo or Real Basic since like 2001, I guess. And,
yeah.
You know, and I started here in 2012. So yeah, I'd used it for a long time before I came an employee.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been interesting. I've done a bit of work on everything from the web framework to introspection to random text handling to iOS to who knows what to things I can't talk about because we haven't even announced them yet.
Yes, the top secret projects.
Yes, exactly.
Well, yeah, that's cool. That's some good stuff. So speaking of some of the stuff we worked on, apparently, and you know, my memory's a little weak, but I think we had a release last week, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. There was something about that in some email I got.
Yeah, I think we got an email from Dana or something that said we released something. It sounded inconsequential, but
yeah.
But actually, sure. Yeah, last week we released release 3 of 2014, as we name our software, Zojo 2014 release 3, and it adds the iOS target, which has been the number one feedback item on our feedback list for years. Pretty much since the day after Apple allowed you to put apps on their iOS device, I think. Someone probably created that and said, we want to use Real Basic, I guess, at the time, probably.
Yeah.
And it's been the number one feedback request for many years. And we had a little party when we actually closed that feedback request after we shipped because we were all pretty darn excited.
Yeah, and that was quite an engineering project because it involved, and you know, a lot of folks don't see all the work behind it, and well, that's part of our job, so people don't have to deal with the complexity. But leading up to that release, I mean, it includes a new compiler, a new framework, a completely new user interface metaphor and paradigm. There was a lot of work that went into it to get it shipped.
Yeah. When you look at it now, I mean, you just fire up Zojo as you always do. And all you see now is, you know, in the project chooser, there's this new row that says iOS. You're like, that's it?
Yep.
But after like,
so we're
that,
waiting just for that?
After you click that, everything else that comes up is almost entirely all new. And it's pretty well hidden because it's, you know, tied into the familiar stuff you're already used to work with. So it doesn't feel or look like it's all new, but pretty much is.
Yep. And so, yeah, it's really great feeling to have that shipped. And now, of course, we'll, you know, continue adding more to it like we do with everything else.
Yeah, definitely. Having the iOS target's been great. I've been obviously working with it a lot in the past many months as I've been learning how to use it so I can actually attempt to write some instructions for others to learn how to use it. And it's been great fun making iOS apps. And it's actually, I think it's going to be good too, because it's my son, who is 10 now, finds it much more interesting when he sees me designing and making iOS apps that he knows he'll be able to put on his iPad than before when I was making, you know, Mac or Windows type things. And he was like, eh, whatever. Yeah. So, I mean, throughout the beta and the alphas, he would come in the afternoons after school and help me work on an app or something or watch what I was doing. He found it very interesting.
Yeah, when I was teaching my wife Zojo a while ago, she was experimenting going through one of our guides, and she kind of liked it. But one of the first things she said was, well, I want to make something that I take with me on my phone. How do I do that? I had to tell her, well, you don't do that quite yet. Now she can.
Right, Right. Well, I mean, and that ties in a little bit to, I mean, I'll bring this up now because it's somewhat related, is last week was Computer Science Engineering Week. And apparently it's a relatively new thing. I'm aware of this being the second year that they've done this.
Oh, okay.
And it's sponsored by code.org, which is a, you know, a nonprofit charity kind of thing. And its goal is to promote programming among the masses. And last year was the first year that I became aware of it. And I don't think I did a specific webinar related to it, but I did end up volunteering at the middle school last year, as my wife teaches there. And I went in for a day and helped with that. I give a little demo. And I did that again this year, and I did it last week. And I went in on Friday, and she has four science classes. She's a science teacher. And I went into each of the classes and gave a little talk about what it means to be a programmer. And then did a little demo of apps that I made in Zojo. And last year when I did it, I gave, you know, I didn't have a great group of apps that were fun for right. middle school kids. So you could tell they were, you know, getting a little glassy-eyed thing. But this year, you know, I was prepping for this all year long. So I've done webinars and games a couple times throughout the year. And then with iOS stuff, I knew I wanted to have something that would be a good demo for these kids. And I, you know, I do work for Zojo. So I had a rough idea when we were going to ship. So,
yeah.
So I had this timed pretty well, and I was able to go into the class with several iOS apps to show them. And I showed them an app that lets you doodle on the screen with your finger and, you know, do simple things like change the line thickness and colors, but they get to see what a real app looks like with real code behind it and what that actually, you know, how you do some of that stuff. And then I showed them a little game as well that is very simple, that has a bunch of squares floating around the screen, and you tap on the screen and have to move a square and keep it from bumping into these other ones that are floating around. And that was just the funniest thing, because they were all like, that's the best game ever. And they're like, is this on the App Store? I want to download it now. And I was like, really? But they were just very excited in a way that they weren't before, when they were used to, you know, when we were showing them computer apps. And some of that goes to the fact that, at least here in Maine, most of the students at schools are given iPads.
Oh, okay.
They don't generally have computers. They have computer labs they can go to, but they all have iPads that they take with them from class to class. The middle school and high schools in particular, they don't buy new textbooks or anything anymore. It's all done on the tablets. And
they have a much deeper connection to iPads than they had to PCs.
Right. So now I have, like, you know, and then I had to explain to them, well, you know, I could submit it, but it'll take a while, and Apple's closed between Christmas and New Year's. Like, there's a slim chance I'll be able to get this game submitted to the App Store before the end of the week. But I said, there's no way it's going to show up before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely should be pretty exciting. And it's just the amount of apps. I mean, even when I was doing consulting, you'd get, you know, clients that would come in that would want often some sort of companion to their main app that you're building for them, but they want to have some companion app that's mobile that can maybe, you know, read in the data from the database, or, you know, do the boring businessy stuff that we do to make our livings. And now be able to say, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. Not a problem now.
And yeah, that should be great for all our customers, be able to just, you know, not have to defer on that or come up with something else. All right. Let's see here. Well, in case you've listened to my other podcasts, you may have noticed that, you know, I now have a smooth, silky voice like Barry White. And it's because I got a new microphone.
Oh, not just the vocal training.
No, I have no vocal training whatsoever. And my appointments with James Earl Jones are not until February. But that would be my ultimate goal, because then, you know, I could just be reading the phone book and, like, I'd get, you know, a bajillion subscribers to this podcast. But I got a new microphone because I figure, hey, if we're doing these podcasts, I do the webinars, you know, I got a kind of an annoying voice at times. Why not try to, you know, make it sound as good as, you know, technology can make it.
Right.
Other than getting James Earl Jones to read for me. So I got this Blue Yeti microphone that I had heard recommended on some people I follow on Twitter that do podcasts that I listen to. And they said, this is a pretty good mic. It's not too expensive. And then when I saw it show up in a lightning deal on Amazon, I pulled the trigger and said, all right, I'm getting it. And I've been using it for the last couple of weeks for our status meetings. And I think I did it for the last webinar as well. And now this is the first podcast with it. And then when I was, you know, prepping with Travis beforehand, it turns out, you know, on his keyboard back there, he's got the same mic. And
he never I actually use some of those in my own home recording studio. They're really pretty good mics for the price. It's tough to beat them.
Yeah, I was surprised. Mine was $80 on Amazon. And the thing I really like is it's got the microphone. It's got the output so you can plug headphones into the microphone.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm doing right now is I'm wearing headphones, but I can hear my voice in the headphones, which if you don't have that little plug on the mic, you can't do that. And then your voice sounds rather muffled and it's kind of hard to talk that way.
Right.
So it's kind of cool. I feel like I'm like in a real little radio studio or something like that. I told Travis the next thing I need to get is some sort of boom mic, and not a boom mic, but a boom to put this mic on, so that it's not just sitting on my desk, at least for the webinars, because I noticed the last one, this mic is so good, it picks up things like mouse clicks very easily.
Clicks and taps. And, yeah.
and typing would get pretty obnoxious. I don't generally try to type during webinars because I'm so awful at it, but I don't want that to get picked up necessarily either. So if I get it on a boom that's floating, it might help with that. So I got to eyeball something there and see what could possibly make sense. All right. Going through random things we're talking about. So one thing about going back to iOS a little bit, it seems like obviously as you would expect with this being the number one feedback request for so many years that this is kind of dominating a lot of the conversation on our forum as well. With people asking questions and making stuff. And one thing that I want to point out to people that is really cool is we've included a fair amount of controls in this first release, and we're going to always be adding more. But our user community has already started going crazy adding things.
Oh, yeah, from controls to other OS calls. Yeah, it's I think this is the fastest I've seen the user community grab hold and add things to a new platform in our history.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive where people are diving right into the declare capability and hooking up other iOS controls and capabilities. So I was even able to, during beta, we had a few people that did that and gave permission to include those as examples that come with Zojo. And even myself, I've taken a little bit of time and effort to start studying some of these very dense Apple docs. That are dense is I like the word dense because they're, you know, they are just thick with stuff in there, and figure out how to create some declares. So I actually myself made a few declares that do a few things.
I'm going to say you did some voice declares and show URL. You did several by yourself.
The voice one I was particularly proud of. I did get a little help from Joe Ranieri, I got it working and I was very excited. But that one was a trickier one because it turns out, and it's something to keep in mind for people that are doing iOS development, is the simulator doesn't simulate everything.
Right.
And one thing it doesn't simulate in particular is any speech to text. So, I studied the Apple docs and how to do that. And I wrote up the declares and I run them and, you know, hey, it didn't compile. And then, hey, my app didn't crash, but hey, I don't hear anything. More digging around and more digging around. And then finally figured out that, and I think it's the iOS 8 simulator that does not support them. The iOS 7 simulator might, but because I have the latest Xcode on and my iPhone 6 is iOS 8 on it, I was running the iOS 8 sim. And then I was so I got to deploy it to the device to test it. So then I just had to do a quick little thing there where I add my developer profile to Zojo, hit the build button, copy that over.
And I think that's also true of voiceover and accessibility things.
I saw that with accessibility. But it's just little things like that that... coming from making desktop and web apps with Zojo, which, you know, often is just so easy. You don't have to worry about some of these little idiosyncrasies because maybe you've been doing it a long time or desktops have just been around a lot longer. it's easy to run into these little mobile type things. You're like, what is going on?
Yeah. And, you know, for a lot of reasons, many of them good, writing something for mobile can be a bit different than writing something for a desktop.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Certainly, and that is something that is interesting from a design standpoint, is just figuring out how you're going to lay out stuff for mobile, because, you know, essentially you've got generally a small screen to work with, and everything runs full screen on iOS. There's no, you know, Windows or anything like that. It's just, you know, this is your...
Yeah, thing. You really need to concentrate on what are the most important pieces of information to display or to get. And sometimes that takes a lot of time to figure that out.
Well, the funny thing, and not the funny thing, but one of the things that we've added to help with that is something called auto layout.
Yeah.
Which has been a tremendous amount of work to get to where it is now. And it is, I mean, those of us at Zoja, we've been using it for a long time, so we're pretty familiar with it, but it's new. Everyone else just saw it for the first time last week, really.
Right.
And today I actually had to put together something for a web app. And I'm laying out the thing, and I wanted to, you know, set up some of my fields so they moved based on the size of something else, and I can't do it.
Yeah, you do get, once you're used to it, it's a bit of a, you know, it can be a bit of a shock to the system at first if you're only used to saying, you know, top is here and left is there. But once you get used to auto layout, it's really quite powerful. And the idea that you can lay out your interface once and have it work on everything from an iPhone 4S all the way up to a 6 Plus and have the interface actually scale correctly.
It's really
quite nice. And then all of a sudden, like you just said, you want it on the desktop up and web.
Yeah, well, I was like, this would be perfect on the web, and I want it now. And I know we've talked about it. We'll see what happens there. But I was like, oh, man, this is killing me. It would have been like 2 clicks on the iPhone app to fix this so my layout would readjust itself appropriately. And now I'll have to put some code in and stuff. But it's amazing what spoils you and what the new stuff you get used to quicker than you might expect.
Yeah, and I actually got kind of spoiled by something that may sound obscure to a lot of folks, but our new date handling in the new framework that makes it really easy to deal with time zones and doing date math. I've wanted that for a long time. And it's nice, and that's supported across all of our platforms now in the current release. So I've latched onto that really quick.
Yeah, that's pretty handy, because you can do things like create two dates and then subtract them, and you get back a date interval that indicates the time between the two dates. And
and if you want something that is a month later, you don't have to worry about how many days did that month have. Is that really going to work and pick the right day? It just works. And when you're doing date math, even across time zones, you might have things like daylight savings time differences. Well, that can be all handled for you now, too. So there's a lot of things that are kind of subtle that you don't really think about with handling dates and times that are now automatic for you.
Yeah, yeah. I expect people are going to run into that, too. You know, there'll be the learning thing that we all kind of essentially, had to deal with months and months ago that now people are seeing for the first time. And you know, they'll get used to it. They'll maybe hopefully see something. Hey, you know, this is better than before. I just got to, you know, change my my thinking pattern a little bit.
Yeah, and we've seen that already in the forum. Some folks ask about the new framework, say, how do I do this? How do I do that? And then once they get used to it, they'll come back and post and say, oh, wow, that is better and more clear. Thanks.
All right, well, that's good. Let's see here. Next year, as people may have heard regarding iOS, Apple made some announcement regarding what they're accepting in the App Store. And I'm going to let maybe Travis take a handle on that, explain what's going on there.
Yeah, yeah. They announced that as of February 1st, 2015, that all of your iOS apps submitted to the store have to be 64-bit. And I recently made a public announcement that we don't do terribly often, but I made a public announcement about our 64-bit support that 2015 R1 will be shipping with 64-bit support for iOS. So as a Zojo user, you don't have to worry about it. You'll be able to build, submit just like you always have, because we will meet Apple's deadline.
And of course, if you're able to get your app in, soon, it'll go in. Because I created the first app that got submitted and accepted.
Oh, yeah. To the there's no problem with Zojo apps going in now. And I've heard from a couple of people that are happily on their way through the review queue.
Yeah, I submitted one as a test. It actually was just one of the examples we include with Zojo, the tip calculator that's in Zojo. I submitted that as is, really. And then after I submitted it, I started to get feedback. Well, you know, you should add this or you should fix this. And then my wife used it like, oh, the font's too small. You need to make this bigger. So now I got this list of enhancements I need to add to Tip Viewer.
Yeah. But of course, that first submission, it wasn't really, and I noticed some forum comments about it, it wasn't really about the application. It was to show that, yes, Apple accepts Zojo built.
Right. Well, exactly. It was just, the examples are meant to show you how to do a certain thing. And this one was to show you how to handle two different views and how you switch between them and do a little math and stuff. And then all of a sudden it's in the App Store. Well, geez, I need a better icon. I need to get actually review the fonts more closely. Right. So I'm gonna go and do that. But the benefit is, of course, this will roll back into an actual example we include with Zojo, so people will have even more complete apps to look at and study.
Yeah, and one more thing about iOS as I'm thinking about it, there are several different approaches that some tools take. Some are native code with native controls. Others are not native code and not native controls, but in case someone's wondering or hasn't checked it out, just like all of our platforms, Zojo iOS is native code with native controls.
Right. Yeah, that's a very good point, Travis. All of our stuff hooks up directly to various things in the direct Apple's framework. They often map, directly to specific UI things that you'll see in Apple's Cocoa Touch docs. And that's what allows you to do declares to access other stuff.
Exactly, because they're actual operating system UI controls.
Yep. Yeah, that is pretty handy. All right, well, enough about this Zojo thing, whatever the heck that is. I mean, it's taking up too much time.
Isn't its name on this podcast somewhere?
Oh, darn it, right. It is Zojo Talk. Yeah, I got it in there. With your keyboard behind you, it makes me think about music again. And so you actually play this keyboard?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I grew up from a young age learning piano. And of course, I made my piano teacher kind of sad as I got older because, she would teach me classical music and, well-known, I guess people would call them oldies songs now that, what I wanted to do was not necessarily perform classical music, but I got into writing pop music. And my piano teacher didn't really appreciate that I was taking my training and leveraging that into something she didn't necessarily like. But, it's been fun for me. I wish I had more time to do it. It's a lot of fun to have different hobbies that aren't all exactly on the computer all the time.
Yeah, that certainly helps with the brain to exercise different things. You never know how that can help you think
more. Yeah, right brain and left brain, keep them both going every once in a while.
My daughter she's now 13, and she plays the saxophone. And she's been teaching herself to play the keyboard, and, something similar to what I see that's behind you there. I don't forget what ours is. It must be a Yamaha or something. And so I can't play anything. I can play, the big thing I can play that I like to tell people is I can play the triangle.
Oh, there you go. Well, that means you can keep time, right?
With the little stick. Maybe. I bet I'd get out of sync pretty quickly. But I can tap it, and I might be able to last. But when I see that, people don't necessarily play the triangle the whole time. They like just tap it at certain points in the music. So I might be able to handle that, but that's the extent of my musical ability. So I always it's fascinating to watch, my daughter play all this stuff, and she teaches herself, popular stuff on the saxophone mm-hmm. that she's not necessarily being taught by her teachers or at band
right.
school or anything like that. And
stuff that she just wants to play.
Yeah. And I think that's great. Cause you want to just be interested in what you're doing. You want to enjoy it. And that means you're going to want to play stuff you like to hear.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I've gotten kind of, one thing modern technology has done to music is I can't perform or play live nearly as well as I could as a kid, because now I, you know, set my computer up, do 1,000 takes of something, take the best pieces, you know, I can manipulate it on a screen and be done. And it doesn't matter that it took me 100 times to get it right. No right. One ever hears the other 99.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like any band or musician today, the stuff you...
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people don't fully realize how much work goes into music production when they actually hear a single on iTunes. How many different people and how much blood, sweat, and tears and takes went to make what you're hearing.
One of my favorite bands when I was growing up, my teenage years, was Def Leppard. And they were notorious for spending years in the studio working on their album. And So I had a couple books about them that I'd read back when I was in high school. And it certainly opened my eyes to some of that stuff. Because, you know, you hear a 3-minute song and they talk about how they spent, you know, 7 months on this yep. guitar riff in the middle of the song. Like, really? Okay. And by the time they're, you know, they're touring and you go see them playing it live or something, they just play it in the, you know, 4 minutes or whatever. But I mean, at this point, they've played that song for years and, you know, must hear it in their sleep, but it's just fascinating.
Yeah. Years ago, one track I was working on, there was a long debate about how many vocal layers to have. Was it more pure with just 4, or did you like, you know, a full 16? It's just crazy the amount of different things that you go through to get a song completely done.
Well, being someone who actually makes their own music, do you use any streaming service? How do you get the music that you like to listen to yourself?
I really still like owning it, and so I usually buy stuff through iTunes. Yeah. But at the same time, I actually do have an active Spotify account, so I'll explore and listen to stuff through Spotify just because you've got a huge library. You don't have to buy anything. It's available. And if I like something or I think I'm going to play it several times, I'll usually buy it. Because even Spotify sometimes has what I call the Netflix problem, where sometimes they'll have to remove a certain song or a certain artist or album. And they usually come back. But if I really like something, I want to have my own copy. No one can take it away.
Yeah. I use a service called Ardio, which is very much like Spotify.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've tried Ardio before.
Yeah, I like Ardio. I found their iPhone app to be just a little easier for me to use than Spotify's one. Although I did get... Spotify had a one of these holiday specials where you sign up for, and they had a 3-month sign up for like $1 or something. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm gonna sign up for that and give Spotify another try, see if they've improved anything. So I've been using it. It's pretty nice so far. But yeah, you know, you go through the trouble of making these playlists, which I have a lot of playlists and stuff. And then all of a sudden, the song that's in there doesn't usually disappear. It just gets a little tag next to it that says not available.
Yeah, right.
You're like, what? Well,
and I keep comparing those streaming services, and I wonder if, you know, probably one day Apple with their Beats acquisition will come out with their own. But like Spotify, I think their desktop client is better than RDO's, but maybe RDO's mobile client is better. You know, there's always pros and cons to all of this.
Yeah, well, it's Spotify's desktop client that one thing it did I really liked was it would merge your iTunes music with their library. So you kind of had all your music in one place. So because there's certain artists and bands that won't put their music on any of these streaming services. AC/DC, I think, doesn't. Def Leppard doesn't. I got a list. Metallica didn't for the longest time. As you can tell, that's
Beatles
that's,
didn't for a long
that's
time.
That's a lot of stuff I listen to, as you can tell. But so it was nice having them all mixed in one place, as you can make a mixed playlist with stuff you own and stuff that's streaming. With RDO, you can't do that. You can only listen to what's streaming, which is kind of annoying at times.
Yeah.
I haven't actually checked if the iPhone version of Spotify does that mixing, though. I don't know. I have to look into that. Yeah, but I do like listening to my music while I'm working, and, you know, particularly to annoy others when they're home.
Yeah, you just have to remember to turn the music off when someone wants to talk to you. Otherwise, it's rude.
So they say. So they say. All right, let's check the clock here and... Well, it's looking like we've chatted for a fair amount of time here. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up, Travis, before we maybe wrap this up?
Let me think. Well, yeah, as far as Zojo goes, I mean, it's been a great place to be working, and I'm really excited about some of the things we have planned for next year. So I'll be excited to show more and more of those things to people as we make them and release them. It'll be a pretty great year for Zojo, and thus a pretty great year for our users. I'm excited.
Yeah. The 2015 does look like to be a fun-filled year with some stuff people should enjoy quite a bit.
Yep.
All right. Well, I want to thank my special guest, Travis Hill. And I want to thank all our listeners. This has been the December Zojo Talk podcast. And next year, the podcast will possibly be more frequent. I don't know if I'm capable of doing these weekly yet, but maybe a couple times a month. And we're also, this is also the last one we're going to do before a live studio audience. I am sorry about that, but it is rather challenging to schedule guests at specific times. So I need to be more flexible about that so that I can schedule these podcasts when it's convenient for the guests rather than when it's convenient for me. So upcoming ones will probably just be, a one-on-one conversation, and then they'll be posted for people to get in their favorite RSS reader. Or I should say podcast viewer, which I guess uses RSS to distribute it. It's probably why I had it on my mind. So enjoy the end of the year. Next time we do a Zojo Talk, it'll be 2015. Hard to believe. Have a great day, everyone.